Well, folks, we are here for our culture segment, and I am very excited to welcome back to the table Glenn Stanton. Hey, Glenn.
Hello. How are you?
I'm doing well. As you all know, Glenn, he's been on the show many times. He's one of our own here at Focus on the Family, our marriage and parenting and general family researcher and expert on basically all things having to do with focus, right?
Mm-hmm.
Except for our cafeteria. Well, you might be an expert on that, too.
Maintenance
issues.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Glenn is also, and we've had him on to talk about a number of his different studies and writings. But right now, he is the just published author of Loving My LGBT Neighbor, Being Friends in Grace and Truth. And I love this cover.
Well, thank you.
It's bright and cheery because it utilizes the rainbow.
Yeah.
Which I do like.
Exactly.
It's just cool. It's
little
cool
houses.
I know.
Those are Monopoly
neighbor
games.
Yeah.
But you know what? It's interesting because you know this when you're doing a book cover and they'll send you like four versions. That's the first one I rejected.
This
and then
one?
We came around to where, you know what, we actually do like it.
Yeah,
so
really
it's really worth the price of the book, cover.
Just to have the cover.
Yeah.
I agree. Well, we're going to actually go ahead and look at some of the themes in this book today. And you know that we here at The Boundless Show love keeping it real.
Sure.
So we are talking largely to an audience that is in this space, whether they are at school with gay and lesbian friends, they have folks in their family, they themselves struggle with same-sex attraction, they are working with gay and lesbian coworkers, have a sibling or aunt or uncle or cousin, whatever. It is just, I feel like millennials and Xers are really in this space. We are living this. And so I'm excited to break it down. And you and I have talked about our stories with our gay and lesbian friends. And so I think this conversation's going to be awesome. So the first question I want to ask you, just kind of kicking off the conversation, because I think much of this hinges on, you know, we have this conversation around how do you balance grace and truth? How do we stick to what the Bible says and say we believe it and not be ashamed of it, but at the same time, truly show Christian love to those who are very much differing from us, not only in practice, but in ideology. And so why do you think, Glenn, is disagreement on this issue equated with hate? I mean, I have a number of friends who I disagree with on a bunch of things, and we can disagree very passionately about stuff, but it never like gets personal or it never gets ugly.
Yeah.
But when I disagree on this issue with gay and lesbian friends or with friends who are heterosexual, but side on the whole, they're for same-sex marriage or they're just for whatever. Why is this issue such a lightning rod?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, you think about any other issue in our culture today, even abortion, that if you disagree with somebody, then that means that you hate them or you're rejecting them.
Mm-hmm.
And I talk about it in the book. Disagreement is not discrimination.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, unfortunately, it has a bit to do with the way this issue has been positioned by many in the gay and lesbian community. Real quick story. There's an anthropology professor at a pretty well-known college, and when she was doing her graduate work, she befriended a lesbian woman, and the lesbian woman invited her, "Why don't you come to a gay bar that I hang out with a couple of my friends?" And, you know, this is a good Christian girl. She had never been to any kind of bar, but she wanted to reach out to her friend. And so she went. And then her friend asked her, she said, "Now that I've got you on my turf with my friends, let me ask you, what is it that Christianity believes about homosexuality?" And this woman, I mean, shocked, put on the spot, embarrassed. She answered wonderfully, just in a beautiful way. But then her friend said, "Well, if that's what you believe, then I can't be friends with a bigot."
Hmm.
And the woman, the Christian woman, felt very bad. She said, "I defended my faith. Why didn't my faith defend me?"
Mm-hmm.
And she said, "I just felt like my friend heard judgment from me." Well, the issue is, she asked you a question.
Mm-hmm.
You shouldn't ask questions that you may not want the answer to. Two, bigots typically do not befriend gay and lesbian individuals, nor are they willing to step out of their comfort zone and go to a gay bar. So this kind of really mean and manipulative accusation that mm-hmm. if you don't accept me, then you must hate me. Mm-hmm. In many ways, and I don't mean this horribly negative, but in many ways, that's how children behave. Mm-hmm. You know, let me do what I want to do. And if you don't, then you must hate me.
Yeah.
We need to call that and just say, you know what, we can disagree and actually love and esteem one another.
Yeah. Well, and of course, we have, you know, Christians on this side of the crazy, too. I mean, to the extreme of, you know, the self-described, you know, you've got the Westboro Baptist folks who yeah. are believing that they're doing this biblically and in the name of Jesus, and there's all kinds of crazy going
and
on
and who
there.
Have come here to pick at us at Focus.
Right, because we're not anti-gay enough.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
okay, seriously? So, yeah, I mean, it's just there's all kinds of that. And I think we could, but Christians can, knowing that we, you know, have... you know, Jesus Christ, we have the Holy Spirit, we have, I mean, we are, I think we can raise the bar on this conversation and we can make, set the example, really, of like you said, coming forward with the truth, putting it on the table, but having that dosed out in a measure of love that's
yeah.
real, that's genuine.
The
not
world
just some
is
saccharine.
Not called to love their neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
We are. In fact, we are not even only called and commanded to love our neighbor. We are called to love our enemies.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
and that puts us as Christians on a much higher level. And we've got to understand that these two false divides that we've created on this issue, and that is either, you know, absolute, uncritical, out-of-hand rejection and condemnation, or on the other hand, let's just put our differences aside and act like there is no difference.
Everything's okay.
Let's put our differences aside and act like, yeah, everything's okay. When actually there's a third way in the middle there, and that is to treat the person always with grace, but treat the issue itself always in truth.
Yeah. Well, let's go ahead and talk a little bit about, you know, because I alluded at the front end of the segment how you and I have gay and lesbian friends. You, by nature of what you do here at Focus, have built a number of relationships with specifically some gay guys because you end mm-hmm. up debating them.
Mm-hmm.
You go to college campuses a lot and are kind of put in, you know, point counterpoint type debates. And as a result, you know, it's kind of like when your speaker's on a panel, and you and I know this, you know,
yeah.
you kind of, you hang out in green rooms together or mm-hmm. you end up, you know, eating together or whatever. And
yeah.
so you develop a friendship.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us a little bit about a couple of those friendships, how they've played out and where, like, if there was the potential or any actual tension, how you've kind of had to wrestle with exactly what you said, that balance of grace and truth?
Yeah, and you do develop those relationships. And even in the sense of, okay, we're debating this issue. We're going to go on a stage in a minute, mm-hmm. you know, and really go at each other. But I want to show you as a Christian, and particularly a guy from Focus on the Family, that I can like you.
Mm-hmm.
I can enjoy you as a person, and I mm-hmm. want to get to know you. I can use all the friendships I can get. And many people go, well, you know, what if your relationship hits difficulties? It's not if, it's when.
Mm-hmm.
And there have been a number of issues like that, of, you know, some of the friends, the guys that I have befriended, we will offend one another,
mm-hmm.
you know, by not realizing that what you say and how you say it is offensive. And we'll have to deal with that,
mm-hmm.
you know, and explain why it's offensive. I need that explained to me, and then apologize and to think about it. But then also to say, you know what, I don't know a better way to say that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're just going to have to deal with that
mm-hmm.
From me. One particular incident is with a friend of mine, John, who lives up in Detroit, and we had an event there. And he said, when you come, why don't you come stay at my house with me and my partner, Mark, who I had met and, you know, really a nice guy. And I said, you know, absolutely, I would love to, because I wanted to extend to him, you know, showing I don't think you have cooties. I, you know, mm-hmm. I want to take you up on your offer of hospitality. But then, you know, I started to think, given my position and, you know, given who I am in this work and in this movement, I want, you know, maybe that's not a good idea. So I asked a number of friends, you know, okay, I've got this invitation to go stay at the home of my gay friend and his partner. I mean, think about that, you know, mm-hmm. listeners. What would you do? Mm-hmm. And so I asked a number of friends, and I got conflicting answers, and finally had to ask the person I was under authority of, and he said, "No, I don't think that's such a good idea." And he said, "You know, you've always got to avoid the appearance of evil." I said, "Well, it's not evil. I mean, I'm mm-hmm. just staying over there." But in the end, I had to honor him, my supervisor, and I had to tell my friend, you know what, I'm sorry, I can't. And it was one of the most difficult conversations I've ever had with anybody, because it hurt his feelings. Mm-hmm. It made him feel like it was about him, mm-hmm. and it wasn't. So that was a difficult thing. And difficult things are going to come up, but that is what friendship helps us move through.
Yeah. And I think it's so interesting, because I'm just thinking of a similar instance I had, you know, and thinking of that instance, it shows how, not that we, you know, a lot of people talk about, oh, homosexuality, we peg it as this super sin or whatever. But I do think it is something so deeply tied to identity,
yeah.
that when you do make a decision like that, and like you said, you know, disagreement is not discrimination, it's so personally wounding.
Yeah,
and so
yeah.
I think of how we're so prone as a Christian community to make everything about our sexuality, not even a Christian community, just the world.
Yeah.
It's like we identify as our sexuality. And like, mm-hmm. I've had people, you know, young adults, Boundless listeners, who are like, I will not be able to go to my grave not having had sex. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, really? Like, that's the biggest thing about you? I mean,
yeah.
that, because
yeah.
if that's the case, well, then I guess I'm sunk, because I'm just ticking away my time. You know, I mean, it's like,
yeah.
but we're just so prone to define ourselves in that way. And so that's why I think, like, I have a, you and I have talked about my gay friend David, who was my trainer for a while, mm-hmm. and how I actually walked with him. I was training with him when he went through the breakup of a long-term mm-hmm. relationship,
mm-hmm.
and the tears and the grieving and the agony and the sorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And I was able to be there for him and listen to him while, like you said, not
yeah.
saying that I agreed with
yep.
his relationship or anything, but the fact is, that partner was real to him and was a personal, I mean, that was a relationship. That was a, and I think we do.
And he's a suffering person.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's like, it doesn't mean that that guy was any less to him, or that that relationship was any, you know, the feelings weren't valid mm-hmm. and stuff. And so what I was there was, I was helping and listening to a grieving friend.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't ascribing to, you know,
yeah.
the
and
merits
of
homosexuality.
He knew where you stood.
Oh, he absolutely
and he didn't
knew.
Think
yeah.
you being kind to him were like, oh, maybe Lisa's softening on this issue.
Yeah, well,
no.
I mean, I think he hoped for that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he still hopes for that, probably. But, you know, that's the thing, is I'm very clear on what I believe, and that's a biblical framework for sexuality, but then I backfill it with the relationship. And it's interesting, because a couple of my friends who are gay and lesbian have actually come around and said, you know, wow, you're not as much of a freak as I thought
exactly.
you were originally.
Because yeah.
we find common ground on other
right.
things, and we make it not
and
about
and it's
that.
Not that you stop being a freak when you get around her. It's
right.
it's those stereotypes, right?
right? Mm-hmm.
And that's a lot of this whole issue is, okay, you've got stereotypes about me as a Christian,
mm-hmm.
and me and many of my Christian friends have stereotypes about you as a gay individual.
Yeah.
You know what? Let's talk about those
yeah.
and let's understand what stereotypes are true
yeah.
and which are not true. But that's very critical. And that's the point that I talk about in the book, Lisa, is we can walk and chew gum at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
We can walk in these nuances of, I love you as an individual. I'm happy when you're happy. I'm sad when you're sad. But you can't expect me to give up on my personal convictions, nor can I necessarily expect you to give up on your convictions.
Right. Now what, okay, let's just talk briefly here about what are really some of the dumbest things that Christians say and do when it comes to interacting with gay and lesbian friends. I mean, from what you've heard from your friends who are gay that are just like, you know, you're not really winning any points here.
Right.
In convincing right. me of any kind of friendship or love. I know there are phrases that are kind of hot
yeah.
buttons. I know there
yeah.
are other things.
I mean, one of the big ones, and you know, there are some gay and lesbian individuals who use this term themselves, but I was living the lifestyle, or what is it like to be in the gay lifestyle?
Mm-hmm.
And I talk about this in the book. You know, living at the beach is a lifestyle.
Yeah.
Liking to sail is a lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
liking to go antiquing is a lifestyle. This, they don't see it that way. This is what I am. It's who I am. Now, there's no real science whatsoever that says people are born this way. They're just not. But they see this as a bigger identity. So mm-hmm. when we say, you know, the gay lifestyle or you living that lifestyle, mm-hmm. it seems to undercut. It would be like, so, you know, when did you start living the Christian lifestyle?
Yeah. You know? Or living the single lifestyle, quite frankly. I mean,
yes,
it's the same thing.
Exactly.
So that brings me to another point. I think one of the other things you mention is to constantly be harping on how gays have just chosen this, quote, lifestyle.
Right.
You just choose to be this way. You choose. And for many of them, they feel it is not a choice.
Right.
It is very, they can't even, I have friends who cannot remember the first time they were same-sex attracted. And they are literally just like, I was born this way.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think for us to just hang our hats on that and harp on it is probably going to be self-defeating.
Well, and what does the research say? There is just no research whatsoever, and it's not from a lack of trying to find this one drive that, okay, there's a such thing as a gay person, just like, you know,
the formula. Yeah.
But nor is it just a choice where if, you know, you're cruising down the road of life and you see a fork in the road and, wow, I'm going to try this, you know, road the less traveled. Mm-hmm. But the reason many feel like, well, you know, I've always felt this way, I must have been born this way, is, yes, these things develop and can develop at very early ages. Mm-hmm. But still, I mean, the other thing is, can you be homosexual and a Christian? Absolutely. Can you be a sinner and a Christian? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. The thing that you can't do is you can't succumb to homosexual attraction, homosexual desires. Just like I can't, as a married man, succumb to my desires for women who are not my wife. Mm-hmm. Single individuals cannot, heterosexuals cannot succumb to their desires for people they're not married to. Right. The same is true for the homosexual person. Mm-hmm. But you can have same-sex attraction and be obedient to a Christian sexual ethic as Christ teaches us. And please Christ in every regard. I mean, that's mm-hmm. that's Christian discipleship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember, in fact, I think it was Kathy Keller when I interviewed Tim and Kathy, and they were talking about singleness and the gay individuals in their church who are same-sex attracted, you know, who choose to do that. They live as celibate, you know, believers in light of that. And she referred to one of the guys had self-described as like his disordered sexuality. Mm-hmm. And it's not that he's saying, you know, God messed up and God can't control this and God can't change him. He fully believes that God can, mm-hmm. but it's kind of similar to, I may be single, feeling called to marriage, but because of many cultural things that have happened through the generations, there are singles who want to be married who are not married.
Right, right.
And as a result, I am not married, but it does not give me license to act out sexually. It doesn't make me a less of a sexual person or that I can't be feminine. So again, I think it's kind of parsing out the differences there.
But, and many in the gay community will say, so you're saying that because of Christianity, I cannot live a full sexual life. Mm-hmm. And that would be like you saying, yes, I'm telling that you can't live that way. But, oh, yeah, there's me as a single person.
Right.
I can't live that way either.
Right.
What makes your story any different than mine?
Or the marriage. I mean, we're all under constraints. We're
right.
all, none of us are allowed to live unbridled in sin. So I think
another, you know, kind of thing we get wrong and is the line, love the sinner and hate the sin. Mm-hmm. And we mean very nice things by that. Mm-hmm. And we mean something very kind by that. But we need to understand, and Christians always need to understand, how does it sound to the other person? Mm-hmm. And we can make the distinction between the sin and the sinner. But the gay person, as well as, you know, people in any other situation, if you're saying that what I do is unacceptable, then you're saying I'm unacceptable. Mm-hmm. It's as if atheists were to say about Christians, hate the irrationality, love the irrational. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, you're calling me irrational.
Yeah.
What you know, I don't take that as a very good kind of compliment. We need to understand that. But I would say all in all, in that little cliches that we as Christians use are just never really helpful. Right.
Well, and also, and of course, we're here at the end of our time, so you guys are going to have to jump on the blog and weigh in on this conversation. Again, it comes down to so many of us are just not even legitimately or really in the sphere of our gay and lesbian friends. Mm. We're so prone to just separate or to put them at arm's length and stuff. And I mean, I want to know, you know, y'all that are listening, weigh in on the blog. Where, you know, do you have a relationship with that coworker that you stand by the coffee pot every day and chat with? Or maybe it's a sister or brother, or how are you guys engaging right where you are? Glenn and I would love to hear that. So again, the book is Loving My LGBT Neighbor by Glenn Stanton, Being Friends in Grace and Truth. Glenn, thanks so much for opening up the discussion for us.
Thank you, Lisa.